Hello and welcome to Rad Mom Radio, a podcast dedicated to moms and all their favorite topics. My name's Natalie and I'm your host. Hello and welcome back to Rad Mom Radio. Thank you so much for joining me this week. This week, my guest is Jenna Ponte-Jockis of N is for Nature Play. Jenna is a mom to twin girls. She's a landscape artist and she's a nature play expert. Jenna designs nature play areas for children and she also designs sensory gardens. She is very passionate about teaching parents and children how to create spaces in nature that speak to all of our senses. And I actually learned through my conversation with Jenna that we actually have 7 senses, not just the 5 that we learn about in school. You'll have to listen to the whole episode to find out what those 2 extra senses are. Actually, you could just Google it, but you should totally listen to the episode. It's really good, if I do say so myself. When Jenna began designing these nature play spaces, she noticed that there was a gap in her industry, which was designing spaces for children who have sensory issues or sensory differences. You know, autistic children and children with sensory processing issues. She became passionate about specifically designing with those kiddos in mind. And I absolutely love that as a mom of an autistic child. I love it when people keep children with special needs in mind, super important. I really loved recording with Jenna. She's such a cool lady. Like, she's so easy to talk to, open, accepting, very down to earth. I also really love what she offers to her community. She's got a great website with all kinds of helpful information. It is nisfornatureplay.com. She describes everything that she does and she really, I think, wants to empower parents to create these spaces at home. So just really, really cool lady. Really enjoy talking to her. She also has a really cool group on Facebook that I definitely recommend joining. It's called Sensory Rich Nature Play. And in her group, she shares projects she's working on and ideas for parents who want to implement kind of like a nature play area at their home with their kids. So definitely check her out. Big thank you to Jenna for your time and just for the conversation. It was really great. I really enjoyed it. This is my interview with Jenna Ponte-Jockis. Hi, Jenna. Welcome to Rad Mom Radio.
Hey, Natalie. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome today. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for, you know, making time in your schedule for me.
Of course.
We were talking about, and this is just like, I guess, a special interest of mine is like where people live. So You're talking about being in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
So we're in summer now. What, and I know you guys are known for being like rainy a lot.
Well, that's the opposite side of the state. I'm actually in a very dry area. Yeah, we get probably 21 inches of rain a year. So really opposite of the Seattle area.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. That's probably better for what you do because you spend a lot of time outside, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, time outside, there's no bad weather in my opinion. So I love the rain. I love the snow. I love summer, spring. Spring's probably my favorite. But yeah, any time of year is great to be outside. For me.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I do have a couple of icebreaker questions for you.
Sure.
And so I did see, like, just in looking at your website, you have twin daughters.
Yes.
Which has to be interesting. So
Yeah.
So my first question was, in 3 words, like, how would you describe what it's like to be the mom of twin girls?
Yeah, I thought about that. I would say exhausting. What did I come up with? Exhausting adventure in healing. Yeah. So, and for me, that's from my perspective. Exhausting is pretty obvious. I mean, any parent relate with that, whether you have multiples or not. Mm-hmm. But it's not common knowledge, I would say, in my circles, but I dealt with cancer when I was in my 30s. And at the time, I didn't think I was going to be able to have kids. But my body healed enough that on the tail end of the healing process, I got pregnant with the kiddos. And just having them in my life has been so healing in so many different ways, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, all the things that they have. And I knew this would happen. I've always wanted to be a mom. They have given me so much. And I bet 99.9% of moms would say this too. They have given my life so much. I'm never bored anymore. I'm never wondering what I'm going to do with my day. It just happens. Mm-hmm. And of all the things I do in my life, it's my most favorite thing is being a mom to these two girls. They're 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My son's 8 yeah. also. It's a good age. All right. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. It's an incredible age.
It is. It's fun.
On it.
Mm-hmm. Are they, you know, like, are they at that stage where they're kind of like feisty a little bit as far as like how they express themselves verbally?
Yes.
Yeah.
My kids have always been really verbal, really good with language and communication. They can express how they feel like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that because it makes me more aware, and they're just really good communicators. But yeah, they are definitely trying to find their own independence and really wanting us to understand how they think mm-hmm. and how they experience things. And which is great because in our family, we really try to be, you know, everyone has an equal say, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like super dominating parents and the kids are subservient and that sort of thing. It's really like we really strive for equality and valuing everyone's opinions. Mm-hmm. So they bring it. It's so fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My other question for you is sort of, I mean, it's partially selfish and then it's kind of opportunistic because you work in nature. Uh-huh. I'm one of those people that can't keep a plant alive. And it's very sad because sometimes I do try. Like, I really do try. My son brought home this little potted plant I think it was for Mother's Day. And I was like, okay, I'm keeping this one alive. This one has significance. I'm going to do it. Yeah. That thing died within a week. And I watered it. And I didn't know what it was. That could have been part of the problem. I still don't know what it was. So my question is, like, what's your favorite indoor plant for someone that needs like a really low maintenance plant?
You know, you can't go wrong with a peace lily. Mm. They are really low maintenance, you know, watering, good sunlight. Actually, they can take a little bit of shady spaces. So if you have a room in your house that doesn't get direct sunlight all the time, they're a great plant for that.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're pretty hard to kill.
Okay.
Okay. One would be ficus are pretty easy. There's a plant called China doll that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Grows really tall. So if you have a room with taller ceilings, then gives that chance, that plant a chance. But I think the China doll I had was like 8 foot tall at the time.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. But I'll have, that's a really difficult question for a plant geek like me. what might be, they all are.
Yeah.
But yeah, those would be where I would start.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to try one of those.
Yeah. Try a peace lily first.
Okay.
But do your research too
mm-hmm.
to understand their light requirements and their water requirements.
I think I've always been kind of confused about the sunlight aspect because it doesn't necessarily mean that the sun is shining directly on them, right?
Correct.
It means there's sunlight in the room.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll pick it up.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I'll have to try one of those.
Yeah.
So, you know, before like we get into, because you're a nature play expert, but before we get into like talking about what you do, there was, you know, we found each other through like a site that matches podcast hosts with podcast guests. And so there was a quote on your profile that I thought was really interesting. And it says, you know, my work exists at the intersection of neuroscience and the magic of childhood.
And so my first thought was like, I want to hear all about what does that mean and what does that mean to you?
Yeah. So I'm a landscape architect and nature play expert, and I've been doing this work for 23 years now. And so I've been designing children's nature-based play, learning, and therapeutic environments for that long. And all of my work is evidence-based. It's all based in all the research. My focus is, in order for children to be their best versions of themselves, they really need to have a happy, healthy nervous system. Mm-hmm. And so when you create spaces that feed the nervous system, what does that look like? And so, of course, it has to be nature-based, because nature is, it's our most powerful healer that we have available. It's all around us. And how do children connect with nature? They connect with nature through their sensory systems. Mm-hmm. And so when you can create a play and learning environment that really feeds their sensory systems in all the ways, like holistically, all of their sensory systems, then that gives them better nervous system health. They can maintain nervous system balance better. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, they can play to their greatest ability. They can learn to their greatest potential, and they can connect with others to their deepest and most meaningful ability. Mm. And so that's really what I'm striving for with the neuroscience and the scientific approach. But then, you know, here comes the magic of childhood. And this is something we want to keep for our kids, right?
Yeah.
It's really like the hallmark of, and really the most, you know, I'm going to use the word magic again. It's the most magical time in all of our lives is childhood. Mm-hmm. You know, we come into the world fresh. We're looking at everything. Everything around us is new. Mm-hmm. We are always in a process of learning. We explore, we discover. Children have that, they can get into a space of awe and wonder so easily, mm-hmm. because everything's so new and they're so innocent.
Yeah.
So we want to really protect that aspect, mm-hmm. of childhood. It's the most important part. And so when I either design new playscapes or I teach people how to enhance their existing playscapes, those are the two pieces I'm always really focusing on. Mm-hmm. You know, are their senses supported, which works for all kids, all abilities, all diversities. Mm-hmm. And can we maintain a space? Children are going to bring their own magic, right? They're going to bring their own wonder. They're going to bring their awe, but the space has to support that. It has, mm-hmm. to encourage that. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of ways to do that. But it really goes back to, is this space, does it feed all their sensory systems? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's really the core of the work that I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all backed by evidence.
Yeah. How did you discover this, and how did you get into working in landscape and nature in the first place?
From the time I was little, I was outside all the time. I was out in the garden. I was, you know, that was just me out in the field or the pasture or the, you know, the canal looking for snails and stuff. So I've always done that. I've been kind of a self-taught artist. So my mom kind of naturally said, well, maybe landscape architecture, you know, after high school, maybe that's the approach or, you know, the avenue that would be good for you. So I went down that road, and it was, you know, I fell in love with the profession, but I really fell in love with designing children's landscapes. And that kind of happened just through in my master's degree, just kind of fell into really understanding what children need for play and learning. Mm-hmm. And of course, bringing my nature-based background to it.
Yeah.
And so that's how I got into it. How I got into the senses was in my master's work around 2004, I came to understand autism, mm-hmm. and how challenging it is. Mm-hmm. And in 2004, the rates were one child in 250,
yeah,
was somewhere along the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so back then I'm like, holy cow, that's actually a lot of kids. Mm-hmm. And my profession, the design industry, this is not on anyone's radar. I have not heard of any designers at the time addressing it. So I really dove into learning as much as I could from, you know, all the different professions, whether it was medical doctors or teachers or occupational therapists, you know, you name it, I tried to learn as much as I could from them about autism, mm-hmm. so that then I could create design spaces that were supportive of children experiencing autism. Mm. Now the rates are 1 in 36.
I know.
Yeah. Isn't that insane?
It is.
And so, and it's still not on, generally speaking, it's still not on the design industry's radar. Mm-hmm. And so that's like, that's what I focus on now. Because what I found in the 20 some years or 19 years or whatever it is of researching autism and designing for autism is that when we create spaces that are good and supportive for children experiencing autism, it's actually good for all kids.
It is.
Because it's sensory based. Mm-hmm. It's really sensory based.
Yeah.
And so that's how I got into really focusing on children's seven senses.
Yeah. I think that's interesting that it's like you said, it's not really on anyone's radar. Like it's not really tapped into yet and maybe that's because people think that it's a huge discrepancy, but really like there's very easy ways to accommodate autistic people. It's really not as complicated as people probably think that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's for the neurotypical folks, it's impossible putting ourselves in their shoes to really understand what their day-to-day life experience is like. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we all, you know, no matter what angle we're coming from, we all need to put on our most compassionate hats, so to speak, and really try to understand that, you know, a lot of it is really, you know, their reaction and their experience of things is a lot of it is very much based in how their senses pick up the environmental information and filter it. And in some ways it can be really discomforting. In some ways, you know, it can be painful.
Yeah.
And so they're not having tantrums because they're, you know, trying to be difficult. They're having tantrums because their body doesn't feel good. And it doesn't feel safe. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, autism can, you know, present itself so differently from person to person to person.
Yeah.
That, you know, for my industry, it can be challenging to like, oh my gosh, I've got a group of kids and, you know, a group of kids in this classroom and three of them experience autism in different ways. And so how do I create a supportive environment? But you're right, Natalie. It's not as complicated as it sounds if we focus on something as simple and basic as the senses.
Yeah.
That's a real, like, that's for me, that's the foundation of environmental design for all kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were a lot of, well, not a lot. Well, yes, a lot. There were a lot of things that I learned when my son was diagnosed with autism. So he was diagnosed when he was like, had just turned four. And there was a period of time where I took him to like a play-based therapy. Yeah. And that was when I learned about proprioception. And now, since I learned about it, it makes so much sense that that would be something important to incorporate in play. But I literally never heard of it before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I talk about children's seven sensory systems. There's seven physical senses that are equally important to our ability to navigate our environments and to thrive in our day-to-day lives. And so, you know, the five senses that we all know and love, sight, touch, taste, smell, and sound. Mm-hmm. But then there are two more physical senses that, like you say, a lot of us don't know about, especially parents may not understand. And so the proprioceptive system is really fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like our internal body awareness system. Mm-hmm. And it's actually of the seven, it's the only one that doesn't require external stimulation, like environmental input. It's fully internal. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, body awareness, you know, where our limbs are at relative to our core, where our bodies are at relative to the things in our environments all around us. Mm-hmm. But it also has to, so big motor skills, moving, that sort of thing. But then it also has to do with the use of force to do an activity. Mm-hmm. So the example I always give is, you know, I'm thirsty and I have a paper cup of water sitting in front of me. So my brain will communicate to my muscles and joints and tendons and ligaments and all the way down to my fingertips, that how much pressure my fingertips need to pick up that paper cup of water without squishing it or without it letting it slide through my fingers. Mm-hmm. And so proprioception can be like, if you have a child that needs proprioceptive stimulation, it's so easy to kind of incorporate it into different play activities. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, coloring with a crayon, using a zipper, tying shoes, using a watering can, mm-hmm. using a hose, gardening with hand tools or with your fingers, building sandcastles, building with loose parts, you know, like natural materials or Legos. There's so many things that feed the proprioceptive mm-hmm. system. It's truly amazing. Mm-hmm. And then just quickly, the seventh sense is our vestibular system, which is located in our inner ear. And that system has to do with knowing where we are relative to the gravitational pull. So am I right side up? Am I upside down or am I sideways? Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, activities for children that feed that system are swinging, rolling, rocking, running, walking, crawling, climbing, and all these things that really get children kind of off center. Mm-hmm. And really gets their bodies in communication with gravity. Mm-hmm. And so any activities like that really feed the vestibular system. And so when kids have lots of opportunities for those sorts of activities, it gives them better body confidence and they feel more comfortable moving in bigger ways, different ways, mm-hmm. and just really gives them kind of just better body confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very interesting. And it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. Like, I know with the proprioception, kind of like one of the ways the therapist helped me understand it is like pressure, like you said, pressure. Mm-hmm. So something she would do is, she said, gently like squeezing the joints of the body helps with that. So like the elbows, yeah. And she called it hot dogs. It's like the arms are like hot dogs. So uh-huh. She would say, like, to my son, she'd say, Riley, do you want to do hot dogs if he was getting dysregulated? And she would just gently squeeze up his arm, his elbow, his shoulder. Yeah. So I sometimes do that with him if he's dysregulated. That's awesome. And then the vestibular one was cool, too, because, like, one time she had us – because she didn't have a swing. It was, like, an indoor thing. She didn't have a swing yet. And so she had us – lay him down in like a blanket, and then we each took one side and just gently swung him back and forth. And so those were really easy ways that she kind of taught me what those things were. And then when you look at some of the products that are out for kids with sensory issues or autistic kids, is like swings mm-hmm. are huge, all kinds yes. of different swings, indoor, outdoor. Mm-hmm. And then if you think back on like Temple Grandin, who's like a famous autistic woman, and her like mm-hmm. her hug machine that she invented.
Yeah.
It just yeah. a lot of it makes so much sense when you
yeah
think about it, you know.
Yeah. It's really amazing what will calm the body. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of kids that need to move mm-hmm. in order to be able to learn. Like they need to move at the same time or right before mm-hmm. you're asking something of them. They need to balance their nervous system in that way mm-hmm. before they need to engage.
Yeah.
And or some kiddos with visual sensitivities might only be able to look at their teacher or you out of the mm-hmm. peripheral vision, mm-hmm. the side of their eye, mm-hmm. because looking at you head on mm-hmm. is too much information for them. So that if you're asking them to talk with you, they might need to look at you sideways mm-hmm. in order to do that, because that's a lot to ask of a child. It's a lot of sensory mm-hmm. information to filter and process for their mm-hmm. body sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say it's really important for us to be as compassionate and understanding as possible, because we cannot ever put ourselves in their shoes mm-hmm. Because our bodies are just wired differently.
Yeah. So when you get approached to create one of these spaces, a nature play space, because it is, in my opinion, at least very artistic. And when you're an artist, yeah. like you look at something, and we all have our process. So what's your process when you approach a space to transform it into like a nature play space?
Yeah. The first questions I like to ask are about the kiddos using it. Mm. What are their interests? What are their loves? Do any have sensory sensitivities? Mm-hmm. So I really like to get a feel for the pulse of the children using the space first. And then secondly, You know, what are the opportunities that exist in any space? Are there existing trees, existing landscape, topography that we can maybe put an embankment side in, or, you know, a hill slide? And so I really kind of look at both of those together. Like, mm-hmm. what does the existing space offer? But more importantly, what are the needs of the kids? And just framing my mind in what can we offer them so that they can all thrive in this space. Mm-hmm. And so really it's a blending of those two, like children plus environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's my process, but really it starts with the kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they typically spaces that are, I mean, is there anything about it that's kind of like portable, or is it all is it like a, I guess if you were to try to help someone visualize one of these spaces, is it like a little playground, or is it more like a station, like a sensory station?
So I would describe it. So the work that I do typically has very little quote unquote playground equipment, mm-hmm. other than maybe slides and swings. I don't do so much like the post and platform structures that you see out at local parks. So really I use natural environments to create different kind of sensory settings or zones, mm-hmm. in like a someone's backyard or a Montessori school's outdoor space. So I do kind of think of them in terms of zones. Mm-hmm. And so you might have like the entry zone, maybe it's a covered space, maybe it's your porch, you know, where you can do a variety of different things, whether it's, you know, outdoor art or learning or, you know, gathering or picnicking or something like that. And then there's always pathways that connect the different setting because mm-hmm. children want to move. Mm-hmm. And so you can guide them by providing different pathways. But then around that space, you might have a mud kitchen, which is mm-hmm. multisensory. That's, mm-hmm. it hits all seven senses. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of a lot of the different nature play settings and features, is that they are multisensory. So you don't have to have a ton of things. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have a couple really like curated and selected items or features, like a mud kitchen or a water play area or an embankment slide with a climbing, you know, maybe some rocks or stumps or a hillside to climb up. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have a little swing set or a hammock somewhere. Maybe you have a little like wild, messy space that mm-hmm. really is kind of untended. Mm-hmm. It's not manicured like maybe some of your other spaces. And that's where they can really do lots of imaginative play. Maybe you have a little fort out there or some sort of cozy space, mm-hmm. where kids can go in and hide or have some me time or sensory regulation time, read a book, whatever they want to do. They have like a little nook they can go to. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of different ways to create really wonderful play and learning spaces by what you add there. And it's all based on what the kids want to do and what you know is developmentally appropriate. Mm-hmm. But really what will speak to their full body system, their full sensory system.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever like, and I ask this because we just got two Labradors.
Yes.
Do you ever, is that ever a challenge, is like building these spaces around pets?
Sometimes. I mean, I my dad's a veterinarian, so I grew up around animals. Mm-hmm. So I think the more animals, the better. Like, we have chickens and geese at our house. We have dogs and cats and whatnot. So to me, it just adds to the beauty and the sensory value when you can have pets out there. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know I've worked with groups that have had pigs and things like this and rabbits. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, there's a space for them. Sometime you may not want the pig traipsing through the nature play space all the time, or you may not want the geese to come in, mm-hmm. Because they'll eat everything, or the chickens, I should say. But to have them in close proximity to kids, dogs are wonderful. That just adds to the value.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Ours are a little bit wild, but I feel like once they settle down, I would like to do something like that for, yeah, my son. I noticed, like, you know, before the pandemic, he's a bit of an indoor kid. He's back and forth. You know, sometimes he really wants to be outside, sometimes he wants to be inside. But we had taken him camping, like, right before the pandemic started, or the summer before. Yeah. And we really struggled with, like, how's he going to do? He's going to be so bored. You know, we're going to hear that teenage bored, like, I'm so bored thing. And I packed, like, a bag full of all these things, you know, to try to take up time, like, activities, like, paints and all these things. And in the end, none of it was touched. He literally just hung out outside the entire time. He was very calm, just very relaxed, and it was the craziest thing. Like, I just really did not expect that from him. He never once talked about being bored. He was in a good mood the whole time. And so I think that's, like, when I learned that, yeah, like, nature is very powerful. Like, I think for all people, like, I don't think it's necessarily something that's, like, some of us it affects that way. Like, it really is very, it's a very powerful thing, a very powerful connection that we can have to nature. Yeah.
Truly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful. And I'm so glad to hear that. And that's absolutely true. There's mountains of research that points to how nature is healing for us in all of the different ways. I'm reading a book right now on grounding or earthing. I've known about this concept for a long time, but it comes back into my work every now and then to remind me just how important it is. And that's probably what your son and you were experiencing is just the, you know, the earth's healing vibration or energy is just coming through to care for the body, to energize the body.
Yeah.
And the fastest way to regulate one's nervous system is to put your bare feet on the ground or to go swimming or to garden with bare hands so that you're in like immediate contact with nature. And it does really quite dramatic things for our health.
Yeah.
So the more kids, the more we as parents can be out, even if it's just in our backyards, we still get that benefit. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I was actually going to ask you about grounding because I think it's really an interesting thing. And I know, like, you know, like people struggle with different things like anxiety, and something that, like, I have experienced in the past is like panic attacks. And I've noticed, like, putting your bare feet on the ground is huge. I don't know why. It sounds crazy, but it really does help you regulate.
Yeah. Yes, they say that the earth has earth is energetic. It's like electric, essentially. And so when we put our we are electric. When we put our bare feet in contact with the earth, then she's able to give us her energy through you know, they're called negative electrons, but they're really good for us. Our bodies are designed to respond to that in positive ways. Let me give you an example from yesterday. So my mom has high blood pressure. She's had a heart attack before, had heart surgery in 2018. And just recently in the last couple months, she's experiencing high blood, like kind of like 180 over 90 blood pressure or higher. And so she was saying to me yesterday, as I was reading this book on grounding, she was saying how her blood pressure is still high and she doesn't know what to do and she needs to talk to her doctor. And I'm like, hey, take your shoes off. Let's go sit outside. Cause I was already sitting outside. Come sit with me, put your feet on the grass. Let's take your blood pressure in 15 minutes. After 15 minutes of having her feet on the ground, her blood pressure was 118 over 65.
That's crazy.
Like, I tried not to say I told you so because she was kind of skeptical about it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, yeah, no, you need to do this like multiple times a day, as long as you can. And and there's a ton and the book I'm reading right now is written by a cardiologist. And so there is a ton of rigorous research, peer-reviewed research on this. It's not new. I mean, this is age old wisdom that we have gotten away from. And and same with nature play. That's age old wisdom that we have gotten away from. And now we have given it a name and we're bringing it back with intentionality. Because we have to, because our health of our children and the rest of us have been suffering for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really cool that you know, you talk about the nervous system, because I think that we don't realize how, first of all, how important the nervous system is, but then how easy it is for it to get imbalanced, you know? And we've been through a lot in the last few years.
Oh my gosh.
And I think, I don't know, like, I always wonder how different cultures do things differently, but like, maybe we minimize that a little bit, you know, like we've kind of moved on and maybe we don't want to think about it, but we've been through a lot.
I totally agree. And you know, in our Western society, we gauge our progress, our quote unquote progress, by our, you know, medical and technological advancements. But yet as a society, we are more unhealthy than ever before. Mm-hmm. So that cannot be progress. Mm-hmm. That we are going backwards. Yet there's lots of indigenous peoples around the world whose health is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And they are practicing this age old wisdom of living. Mm-hmm. That is progress.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, totally. We're like, our Western society has it backwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're teaching that and promoting that with our younger generations. Mm-hmm. And so we really, like, we need to have a screeching halt on what mm-hmm. we're doing right now and getting back to simpler ways, because that's what works. And mm-hmm. it's what works in the sustainable long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we get caught up on like accessories too. Like we think we have to have all these things. Cause you're talking about living simply. And my brain goes there too. It's like, okay, well, there has to be a kit somewhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But there doesn't. Yeah. But then you said a mud kitchen. I was like, okay, well, that's very like, that sounds pretty doable. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't sound like it has to be that complicated. It has to come with all the bells and whistles, you know, it's kind of
And, you know, a mud kitchen, that's the, you know, kind of like a kitchen type space where kids can, you know, create whatever it is, that concoctions or potions or food, mm-hmm. Food in quotes, with, you know, mud and, you know, grass blades and pine mm-hmm. cones and whatever it is that they find around them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you can outfit a really simple mud kitchen area with things from a secondhand store or things that, hey, friend down the road, or hey, neighbor, do you have a couple extra like frying pan, you know, like frying mm-hmm. pans, utensils, plates, et cetera, you know, that you're not using. Yeah. So you can outfit a mud kitchen for free, and they are incredible. They are one of my very favorite sensory mm-hmm. natural play and learning features. And the great thing is, with a mud kitchen space, you can actually evolve that as your kids get older and their interests change and their developmental needs change. We had a mud kitchen here at our house. I built a sensory garden for the kids here when they were, you know, I started when they were 2.5. So their mud kitchen has evolved into, my older twin really likes to make things. And so we're now transitioning that to a maker space where we're giving her different tools to create things. So it's just kind of an outdoor place where she's working on her crafts and that sort of thing. So the beautiful thing about natural play and learning is that it evolves with your kiddos as mm-hmm. they grow and develop.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
Do you ever get to do these, design these spaces in schools?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I've done a couple of, we call them outdoor learning labs, at least at the couple schools I've worked with. I've done elementary. I'm working on one right now. It's in construction for an alternative high school. So all the ages mm-hmm. and all the ages are ecstatic when they hear that they're like, learning's happening outside.
Mm-hmm.
In all the cases, these environments have become spaces where they're multifunctional for the schools, like the counselors. If there's behavior issues, mm-hmm. they'll bring the kids outside and have their talks outside. They'll maybe engage them in some activities. Like one counselor likes to take her kids out and weed. And then she talks about like how weeding, you pull out what you don't want. You farm out what you don't want in your life mm-hmm. so that the beautiful things in your life can grow bigger. Mm-hmm. And so she really makes it into kind of a tool to illustrate some of what she's trying to impart to those mm-hmm. children mm-hmm. to help them reframe.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really beautiful how these spaces are actually multifunctional, and they give so much value in all the different ways for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I think someone had just said this to me recently, like kids really like novelty. So like trying to have them do, you know, these really structured, rigid things over and over and over isn't always the best approach.
Boring.
Yeah, it is boring. Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, yeah, novelty outside. I mean, it's each and every day because these spaces change from day to day, season to season, month to month, you know, year to year.
Yeah.
They're always growing and transforming. And, you know, the wildlife that comes in and out different times of the year, the things that they can learn and discover in each month and every season changes. And it's really beautiful. They really... I consider natural play and learning spaces like really co-collaborators in children's play and learning. So they are equal collaborators with the kids in their experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Yeah. What would be like a good, like, because it, to me, it sounds like something that is like a project that you could kind of take on little bits at a time. So sure. What would be like a good starting thing for a parent that wants to set up this kind of space for their kid?
So I would have them start the same way I do. They are the expert on their kids. And so really observe and give honor to what is it that they love to do? Like, what is it that they can spend hours immersed in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they love to build and organize things? Like, do they, like indoors, do they play with Legos a lot? And so maybe outside you could do like a loose parts play area.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know what that is, that's, there's a whole theory behind it. The more loose parts there are in a child's play area, the more play opportunities exist. And I always say the more sensory stimulation exists as well. But that's like in nature or outside in a backyard, that might be natural loose parts or things that kids can move and manipulate on their own. Like twigs and branches and pine cones and rocks and dirt, water, feathers, blooms, seed pods, things like this. And so they can use these natural bits to build things or create things, imaginative play. And so that can also be done for free because you gather what's around you. But then when you go on, you're like, your walk in the park or your day trip to the beach or wherever you go, just gather a few things and add that to their loose parts kit. And it just, it makes it more interesting. And then they have, if you gather in your excursions, then it also creates meaning and connection for those kids. And they remember where they picked this rock up. Maybe they found a heart-shaped rock at the beach. And so they're connected again to that memory and their experience at the beach, which is really powerful. So, yeah. So I always say loose parts is really awesome. Another easy way to start, if folks are struggling, I would say little edible garden space, whether it's a pot with a cherry tomato and some herbs. Studies show that the more kids are involved with caring and tending of food plants, the more likely they are to eat them without pressure from their parents.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's lots of different, like, what does your child like to eat? Cucumbers? Grow a cucumber vine on your balcony. Little pot of herbs is so, you were saying you don't have a green thumb necessarily. A lot of parents don't or don't have the time.
Yeah.
Little pot of herbs is so easy and it's so multisensory. And then they can use it on their salads or their pizza or whatever it is that they're eating. And then the third suggestion I would have is to help them create a cozy space. And so those are basically child-sized nooks where kids can go to self-regulate their nervous system. They can go have some me time, whatever it is that they want to do. But, you know, they might be a fort. Inside, it might be a blanket fort. They might be a garden teepee. It might just be a little area carved out in the plants. Maybe they've got this little space that they go, you know, through the plants, and there's this little nook that they can hide in. Encourage that. Because it's so good for children of all abilities and diversities. All kids want that feeling of it's like the prospect and refuge concept mm-hmm. where they feel like their back's protected and then they can yeah. look out and observe. Mm-hmm. And that's like, it's in our DNA to feel, to really respond to that sort of setting. Mm-hmm. And so if they have a space where they can do that indoor or outdoor, that's a really beneficial feature.
Yeah.
Multisensory.
Yeah. yeah. Do you feel like kids outgrow this need for like their own space?
They never outgrow it, mm-hmm. but the way it looks will change over time because mm-hmm. their developmental needs change and mm-hmm. their interests grow as they grow into adults. I mean, if you think about your adult needs, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. like quiet time in a hammock is pretty appealing. Like if you're with your favorite book yeah, or whatever yeah. it is. And so, yeah, it never changes. We always need that connection with nature as much as possible every day. Mm-hmm. But the way the environments are crafted does change for the little ones versus mm-hmm. the medium ones versus the older ones.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So like for a teenager, it could look like swinging and listening to music or something like that.
Yeah. Hammocks yeah. are kind of a no brainer, mm-hmm. That sort of thing for a teen. Mm-hmm. Spaces where they can, if they've got friends over, they can hang out outside with their buddies mm-hmm. and socializing like they're really wanting to connect as teenagers oftentimes, or they're really wanting their own personal space as teenagers. Mm-hmm. So having something like a hammock can be either a yeah. social space or a quiet space. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And the time, we mm-hmm. often forget about the time. We need to give our kids time to be outside mm-hmm. and it's okay for them to be bored.
Yeah.
Because when they're bored, that's when their imagination will kick in. Mm-hmm. And imagination is children's superpower. And so if we let them get bored, pretty soon they won't be. They are going to be engaged in doing something that really interests them and stimulates them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the time to do it is as important as the space to do it.
Yeah. That's awesome. How much time, just out of curiosity, would you say is good or like ideal?
I always say as much as possible. I just mm-hmm. start with 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if they really resist, I would say make a point to take your dinner outside mm-hmm. and have mm-hmm. dinner outside. Maybe it's for some kids, it might be too much to go outside on their own. And so they really want that security of another person around. Well, then go outside and maybe I talk with parents about parallel play. Mm-hmm. If they're outside with their kids, encourage the kids to do their own play activities, or maybe you participate too, but also parallel play in that maybe there's something you can do outside that feeds you mm-hmm. while they're doing their play activity that feeds them.
Yeah.
And so I would say start with 15 minutes and build up mm-hmm. because the more, like I say, I always say the more contact with nature we have each and every day, the more healthy we will be as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So where can we learn more about like what you do? Like what's your website? Where can we find you on social media?
Yeah. So my company is called N is for Nature Play. So the website is nisfornatureplay.com. I'm on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So just search for that. So I have a business page, but I also have I would invite your audience to join. I have a private Facebook group called Sensory Rich Nature Play.
Okay.
So they could search for that and then join the group. And that's kind of where all the fun activities are happening, where, you know, I share what's happening in our sensory garden. I talk about nature play, learning in the nervous system, and all that great information is happening in that group. Mm-hmm. I am on Instagram, but as I was mentioning to you earlier, I'm not a huge social media person. So that's the one that's not as robust as mm-hmm. my Facebook group. But that's where I'm at.
Okay, cool. And that was Sensory Rich Nature Play.
Sensory Rich Nature Play. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And N is for Nature Play is the
website. Is my company. Okay. Your company. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for, you know, making time to come on and just share with us. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, me too, Natalie. It was so fun talking with you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me this week for another episode. If you would like to get in contact with me, you can send me an email. My email address is radmomradio@gmail.com. You can also find me on Instagram @radmomradio. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.